This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Tanner Beamer. Tanner is with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association in Washington, D.C. We'll talk with Tanner in just a moment. First off, Jim Davis is with the Economic Research Service, talks about USDA's annual Rural America at a Glance.
The Rural America at a Glance is an annual report, and it usually covers an annual summary of demographic and economic trends with additional topics that highlight current opportunities and challenges that are facing rural America. Each year, the report covers the major topics of population, often poverty and employment, but then focuses and takes a dive into a particular topic of interest. This year's report is focusing on population and migration trends, poverty, housing insecurity, employment, and clean energy jobs.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Tanner Beamer. Tanner is Senior Director, Government Affairs, National Cattlemen's Beef Association in Washington, D.C. Tanner, welcome back to the show.
Always a pleasure, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Hey, speaking of shows, the show that's been happening on the other end of town from you in Congress, that's been quite a show as of late. Some things we've really never seen happen in the past. I guess that means things never get old.
You know, I've never seen such a hodgepodge of drama, comedy, suspense, and historical fiction and fantasy all rolled into one terrible, terrible TV show that we're all forced to watch every day.
But at the end of the day, I refer back to something that Colin Woodall, who is CEO of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, would say when he was in D.C., and it's, we're watching the sausage and how they make the sausage. And it's not always pretty, but at the end of the day, it's usually something we can consume. Is that still hold true?
You know, I'd say by and large, we still have yet to see what the final product will look like. But it is definitely, in the meantime, watching sausage get made. I would agree with that wholeheartedly.
Let's get a little more specific now. Last week, House passing appropriations, and in particular, they were passing the Interior Appropriations Bill, but really seeing appropriations move out of both chambers, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when Congress passed the continuing resolution on September 30th, they gave themselves about 45 days to figure out how to fund the government. And we spent a good chunk of that time bickering and arguing over who the next Speaker of the House was going to be. But once Mike Johnson from Louisiana was selected for that post and won all the Republican votes necessary to be elected, we dove right in. That same day that he got elected, he started working on appropriations bills. So you are correct. Last week, the House rolled out the Interior Environment and Related Agencies Bill, which is a very important bill for cattle producers, particularly in the western part of the country where most of our cattle graze on either BLM or Forest Service permits. A lot of good stuff in that bill, a lot of things to watch for in negotiations with the Senate, but all in all, it was good to see them advance some of the appropriations bills they have to.
Let's also kind of look at that for just a moment, because listening and watching the debate on that H.R. 4821, quite a few amendments, and you had to stay up till midnight to catch some of those, but definitely some concerns about what's happening with the Bureau of Land Management. When you start seeing what was actually the final product out of the House, positive for producers?
You know, by and large, I would say it's positive. You know, there are some pretty concerning cuts in the budget, right? House Republicans are very adamant about curbing federal spending, which I think is something that a lot of cattle producers can agree with across the country. I think the one thing we want to make certain of, though, is that we are not taking necessary resources away from important programs. I'm thinking, of course, of like the Wild Horse and Burro program, right? These rangelands in the West are severely overpopulated with these federally protected horses and burros, and if the BLM does not have the necessary resources to remove those overpopulated horses from the range and put them in long-term holding or conduct fertility control, that problem's only going to get worse. And unfortunately, we're at a point in history where if things get too much worse on some of these herd management areas, we're looking at damage that will not be able to be repaired in our lifetime. So it's really important that we provide adequate resources. But besides some of those concerning funding cuts, there are a lot of things to be positive about in this bill. It curbs the BLM's Conservation and Landscape Health Rule, which is just a dumpster fire of a federal regulation. It curbs Endangered Species Act listing protocols and brings them more in line with the way that the Endangered Species Act was intended to function. And then it's also a lot of good stuff in there on restricting EPA from enforcing greenhouse gas reporting requirements on livestock operations. So all in all, a lot of good policy in this piece of legislation, even if we are a little bit concerned about the funding component in some specific areas.
So we get a product from the House, we get a product from the Senate. More than likely, those two are not exactly the same. So then we have to go to Congress or to conference and work the two out, pass it in both chambers, and then get a presidential signature. So with all those steps or hurdles, if you will, is this a race we can finish?
Definitely not by the November 17th deadline when the current continuing resolution expires and government funding runs out. You know, I've been joking with my colleagues that in terms of how close the House and Senate are in their respective appropriations bills, I'd say the House of Representatives is in Washington, D.C., and the Senate's in Neptune. They could not be farther apart. For example, just if you look at the Department of Agriculture, right, that bill has been considered in both the House and the Senate, failed in the House, and passed in the Senate last week. The Senate version of the bill gave USDA a modest increase over fiscal 23 enacted levels. You look at the House version of the bill, and it already imposed deep cuts when it came out of committee, but it got amended on the floor to include even more draconian cuts to key programs over at USDA. And that's one of the reasons why farm state Republicans joined together to stop that bill from advancing. So, you know, we've got a long ways to go in terms of reconciliation between the House and the Senate. But I am optimistic that at some point between now and the end of the year, we will see all 12 appropriations bills get passed into law, conference between the House and the Senate, and some sort of a deal sent to President Biden's desk. Now, that being said, I think it's going to take one or two more continuing resolutions in order to do that. And I might be being a little bit more optimistic, but hey, that's what I'm here for.
Well, and as we talk about the budget, the Speaker of the House, Johnson, said he wants to bring together a group to find the solution, a bipartisan, possibly bicameral group to find a solution. And from everything we've heard up to this point, you're really not going to achieve that by just reducing spending in these bills. You're going to have to go big. Is that what you're seeing as well?
Well, you know, it really does kind of depend, right? I think, you know, every single Republican in the House of Representatives, let's just take that by itself for a moment. Every single Republican in the House wants to see a curb to federal spending. I mean, we were absolutely out of control during the coronavirus pandemic and the years following, just spending money that we didn't have. And I think that House Republicans want to change that. The degree to which they want to change it and how fast they want to change it varies drastically depending on whether you're talking about moderate Republicans from suburban districts or extreme right Republicans in the Freedom Caucus. And that really is where the vast majority of the debate is unfolding right now. And that's just one party in one chamber. Once you start throwing in trying to make a debt commission bipartisan and bicameral, there's a lot of other elements that you have to consider as well. And unfortunately, just the way that the 118th Congress is shaking out, it does not look like there are a whole lot of opportunities for bipartisan cooperation on things like this. So I don't know how successful Speaker Johnson's going to be in terms of making those things bipartisan. But I do think that if he is able to bring Republicans together around a centralized plan to cut spending that all of them can agree to and hold to that agreement, that will have been worth its time in and of itself.
Okay, so takes us right into something else. We've missed the deadline on the 2018 Farm Bill. It has expired. We are not necessarily in danger right now, but come the first of the year, we'll have some major problems. So what happens here?
You know, I mean, the same political undertones that we were just talking about with respect to spending and appropriations is the exact same that we'll have to look at when examining the Farm Bill. The House and the Senate are going to be miles apart from one another. But I think one encouraging thing vis-a-vis the Farm Bill, all four of what we call the four corners, the chairs and ranking members of the House and Senate Ag Committees, have said that they are supportive of a one-year extension of the 2018 Farm Bill. And that obviously is not ideal, especially on the Title I side of the equation. There are some commodities in desperate need of reference price increases from 2018 just based upon inflationary pressures and the value of the dollar and the increase in input costs from then to now. But I think that a temporary extension is going to be a Band-Aid solution on this critical issue. But unfortunately, just given the political dynamics that we're seeing play out on Capitol Hill, I think that's probably the best solution that we can hope for the time being. Speaker Johnson is still very new to this. Now, NCBA has had a relationship with him and his office since he first came to Congress, and we are very confident in his ability to move legislation through the House of Representatives. But, you know, there is a Senate to contend with as well, and a president who has to either sign the bill or veto it. And that is going to take a lot of good faith negotiation between now and when they eventually take up a farm bill. And just between you and me, I don't see that happening between now and December 31st, when a lot of these major cuts are expected to go into effect.
And just the fact that you did get some bipartisan work, albeit not huge bipartisan work, but the House and Senate have agreed to some things that dealing with ag that the president has vetoed, and no chance to really override that veto. So is that in the back of the mind as well?
You know, I do genuinely think that there is a bipartisan desire in both the House and Senate to move a farm bill. But I think the question is going to be, you know, can Republicans pass a farm bill with only Republican votes? Speaker Johnson's leadership team has pretty explicitly said that they will not bring a bill to the floor unless it can pass with Republican-only votes. And that starts to get really squishy when you have, you know, far-right groups like the Heritage Foundation that just routinely and chronically oppose farm bills for whatever reason. And that's good. They have sway with some members of Congress. So I think if you put a farm bill on the floor today, it could pass with a lot of Republican votes and a lot of Democratic votes in both chambers. But whether or not they're willing to do that remains to be seen.
Okay. If we want to keep up with what's happening at NCBA, can we do that online?
Absolutely. You can visit us online at ncba.org.
Again, Tanner Beamer is Senior Director, Government Affairs with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association in Washington, D.C. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about cotton research. Cotton Incorporated funds more than 400 ag research projects every year. They study cotton, engineering, economic development, entomology, agronomy, pathology, variety selection, expanded cotton seed uses. And that's just the start. You grow the cotton research and promotion program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Our special guest today, Tanner Beamer with the National Cattlemen's Beef Association.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at deltapine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is the Agribusiness Report. Find out more about the upcoming NCBA convention online, convention.ncba.org.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Join us at the Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show, November 28th through 30th at the Amarillo Civic Center. Connect with hundreds of exhibitors showcasing the latest ag technology and attend agriculture-focused seminars, too. Earn your certification at the Beef Quality Assurance Training or attend livestock education sessions with the Texas Tech School of Veterinary Medicine. Hear from experts at the Cotton Conference, earn CEU credits, or attend the Texas Wheat Symposium. It's all happening at the Amarillo Farm and Ranch Show. Visit AmarilloFarmShow.com for more information.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
A positive trend in rural population growth of late.
The rural population has continued to grow since 2020. The Census Bureau data shows the rural growth of 0.25% from July 2020 through June of 2022.
USDA economic researcher Jim Davis is among the authors of the 2023 edition of its Rural America at a Glance report released Wednesday. As for the significance of the trend of population growth in our nation's rural areas,
this continues an important turnaround in population growth from the decade of 2010 to 2020, where annual growth rates were either negative or near zero.
As for the why behind the rise in rural population as a whole,
we found rural growth was due primarily to net domestic migration from urban to rural areas.
In total, Davis cites five main takeaways from this year's Rural America at a Glance report, which also focuses on categories such as rural poverty and housing and clean energy. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.